welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our first guest is Dr. Diane Roberts-Stoller. Doctor, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the invite.
Well, we usually start out with tell us a little bit about your, give us a bio. So why don't you start there, and then we can get into some of the questions about your work.
Well, I'll give you, I think when we talked the other day, and I was telling you that I came from very humble means. I worked 2 or 3 jobs to go to college. I went to Tufts, BU, and Harvard, and I got my doctorate in neuropsychology. I'm board certified in health psychology, and I'm also board certified in sports psychology. And then in 1979, I opened the first integrative practice in New England, where I had neurologists, psychiatrists, endocrinologists, I had psychiatric social workers, psychologists, and I also had physical therapists, speech and language pathologists, I had Reiki, polarity, and acupuncture, all working in 3 different locations. And our focus was on trauma at the time, and also sports psychology, performing, and some of the areas that we always were working on is anxiety. I did my doctoral dissertation in autism, and I came prior, with some of the jobs I was, as I mentioned to you, is that I did special education. I was an auditor for special needs. So I worked with ADD, dyslexia. So that was my background, and, that was 1979, and by 1990, I also was a mother of 3 children. I had 2 10-year-olds and a 7-year-old, and I was driving and had a cerebral bleed and passed out, had a 60-mile-an-hour head-on auto accident, and 5 months later had brain surgery, and after 4 years, by 1994, I was told by every single doctor I was permanently brain damaged. I would never walk, talk ever again. And I lost my practice. I couldn't be a mom. I could barely be a mother. And I was just sitting there not functioning and didn't know what to do. And I asked for guidance. And, you know, with the holidays coming today is the eve of Passover, and also Sunday is Easter. I asked for guidance. And the guidance I got was that to ask the people who I had been working with. And I did, and we started doing acupuncture, and I learned about Igor Bodenko and his water therapy. And by 1997, I had written my first book, Coping with Mild Traumatic Brain Injury, and I was back to work.
Wow.
And I became a professional speaker also at that time. I was seeing patients.
Well, that's quite a journey. Tell us about what it took to get you back from the diagnosis of never walking and talking again.
Well,
I'm
going on a little
again.
Bit more, Josh, yeah. Is that what happened in 2005, I got Lyme disease, and then 2008, there was another auto accident, I had another concussion, and that's when they found I had a brain tumor. And then there was in 2010, I was in a zero-gravity chair, had another concussion. And then recently, as I mentioned to you, in 2015, I was diagnosed with one of the rarest forms of lymphoma that you've ever seen. I have primary hepatic lymphoma, and I have aggressive cancer on it. I have Hodgkin's, non-Hodgkin's B cells and T cells. So to answer your question is that the team I had, the nutritional educator, Martha Lindsay, who's on our team, Igor Bodenko, my dear, wonderful mentor who taught me hypnosis when I was in my doctoral work, Dr. Eugene Izzotti, who's still alive. He's 93, and he's still been my mentor for 50 years. He taught me hypnosis. So through using the various techniques, and then I came upon neurofeedback. So between neurofeedback, hypnosis, water therapy, changing my diet, Reiki, polarity, acupuncture, and psychotherapy, of course, is that I am back. And this is in my both of my books. I talk about this. I give conventional methods, alternative, complementary, and learning about homeopathics. I had a very weird type of headache. I thought I was having another stroke. It's atypical migraines that happen after brain injuries, and my whole right side would become paralyzed. I had slurred speech. I thought for sure I was having a stroke, only to find out it was an atypical migraine. And all these, my stories and other stories are in both of the books. The older book, as I said, it came out in 1997, is Coping with Mild Traumatic Brain Injury. The new book came out in 2013. That's called Coping with Concussion and Mild Traumatic Brain Injury. And in it, all the different, for every single symptom, but the number one symptom of brain injury is headaches, and then we get into sleep issues. And so what are the conventional methods for dealing with sleep, what's complementary, how it can be diagnosed, and also all the alternative methods. And, Josh, I kind of distinguish the difference not because of one is better than the other. It's based on if insurance will pay for it. I mean, everybody, well, for most people, you can get physical therapy and it's covered under your insurance. If you go to a homeopathic doctor, 99 times out of 100, I would say almost 100%, it is not covered. So that's why it's called under alternatives. Some of the other methods, which we talked about the other day, is there is an FDA medical device called a cranial electrostimulation, or CES device, that is FDA approved, and yet no one knows, and it is specifically FDA approved for anxiety, depression, and insomnia, but people don't know about it. So, yeah.
And why don't they know about it?
Because the pharmaceuticals. I can say I'm blessed. I have patients who are from the major farms who have come in and told me what they do. I mean, is the taking the lobbying, from the doctors to the senators to, you know, this pharmaceutical companies and the advertisements on television. I mean, no one has ever watched. I mean, neurofeedback's been out for almost 40 years, and I don't think anyone's ever heard on a radio or a television what neurofeedback is about. Same thing with this device. This is an FDA-approved. And going back to the neurofeedback equipment, all the equipment I use and everything we use here is FDA-approved. They've all been double-blind, proved that they do what they're supposed to do, yet because of poor marketing. And part of going back to what I do, I work locally, nationally, and internationally so that people can call me and contact me. I do a consult with them, look at their symptoms, and then I look at what causes that symptom. And a perfect example is when I talk about symptoms and causes is you can have a runny nose, and you do have to treat the runny nose. Like right now I'm going into my allergy season, but I shouldn't be given an antibiotic, you know, if it's an allergy versus a virus or bacterial infection, which is causing it. So I help people discern look at their symptoms, look at the cause, and then I come up with a recommendation of treatment for both the symptoms and the cause. And I can do this, as I said, locally, nationally, internationally, and I have enough contacts locally, nationally, and internationally to refer to people. So I'm not doing the treatment. I can refer to someone in Cleveland or in New Zealand. Someone called me, contacted. We did a consult in New Zealand, and I know Martin Brink, who does neurofeedback in Brisbane. And so the person got to see someone there. So it's looking at the symptoms that people are coming in with related to, and going back to what, when I came back to work, I really defined my practice to brain health. And so either I'm doing brain rehabilitation for concussions, stroke, ADD, chronic pain, anxiety, sleep, or I'm doing brain fitness for the elite athletes, for, and I don't, when I say athletes, it doesn't have to be, there's high school, college, but I've worked with the Ironman, the Olympic athletes, but also performing artists like on Dancing with the Stars, and also executives who are not sleeping or not being focused. So we do both brain fitness and we do brain rehabilitation. And the other day you asked me, what happens if one of my athletes gets injured or gets a concussion, then they go in brain rehab?
What there's a not no pun intended, but there's a greater consciousness of concussions now in athletes in competitive sports, and so more and more of the unions and
absolutely
are pushing.
Ann McGee, who was at BU when I was there, and her research is in CTE, and that's chronic traumatic encephalopathy. Right now, the only way to diagnose it is upon death. And what we were seeing with these athletes, you know, like the boxers and the football players who have repetitive, and I'm talking about repetitive, like Gronk,
yeah.
You know, we're talking about repetitive brain injuries, is that what happens is the outer layer of the brain lets go, and this protein called tau, T-A-U, comes out, and it's like acid, and it eats away the brain. It just literally eats away the brain. I have a picture of it in my book, but you can't diagnose. And this was the same thing before with concussions. Now, I'm going to really qualify for your audience the difference about brain injuries. People say, well, I know a relative who had a coma, and they obviously had more severe problems. The answer is, the symptoms of a brain injury can be very severe across the board. What's the difference between a concussion, mild or moderate or severe, means? It's how long a person's been unconscious. So someone who's been from brief to 1 hour is called a mild traumatic brain injury or a concussion. From 1 hour to 24 hours is moderate. From 24 hours to beyond is severe, or also called coma. And I've had patients who've been in a coma for 4 months who do not have as many symptoms and severity of symptoms as someone who's only been knocked out briefly. And that's one of the misnomers that people, you know, they say, well, it's mild. It's not too bad. He had a mild head brain injury. And that's another thing. People used to call it a head injury. You can crack your skull and not have a brain injury, and you can be sitting in a car and not injure your skull and have a brain injury from a whiplash. So the brain has been accelerated and decelerated inside the hard skull. So many times kids will be playing in the play yard, and they come down the slide, they've hit their head, they've had a brain injury, and then they go to their mom, and they're crying about the cut arm. The mother hasn't looked at the head and didn't know they knocked themselves out. And so later on, those kids who now go into peewee sports, that they allow them to play football with helmets at 6 years old, and now then when they go into a school and some teachers, they test them and they say, oh, you have ADD. Well, actually, that child has had multiple concussions, and the symptoms are from the concussion, not from ADD.
Wow. What do you see as the emerging climate as far as sports goes in relation to concussion protocols, and how does that going to trickle down into, say, college sports, high school sports? And what does that do to the industry? I don't mean just football or professional football or what have you, but it has a trickle-down effect in terms of physical therapists, trainers, all of that.
First, what they're doing now, I mean, and I'm going to give both sides, is one, they're looking at a urine test to see, and there's the impact test. The only thing about the impact test, you have to get a baseline, and we're talking about someone 13, 14-year-old and above. You're not talking about that 10-year-old who's on their bike and gets knocked out. So, and they, again, they don't tell their mom they fell off the bike and hit their head. Or the kid who's in the car who has had a whiplash. And I have a family, there was a five, all of them were rear-ended, and they all had concussions in the car. But the fact that the other kids went on to play sports, and answering a question. So right now, there's still The closest thing that they have, the CAT scans that many people go, it's a question if they have a concussion, really is not good. It's only good for if there's a major bleed or a tumor. The typical MRI, T3, T4, really doesn't show it. And it's the more expensive equipment, which is standard in Canada but not in the United States, is the SWI, single-weighted MRI, and DTI, diffuse tensor imagery. What is that's for is to look at the electrical system to see if there's been a tear or a shear. This is the only one that you can see. But if someone's saying, I'm just a little bit dizzy, I'm feeling okay, but they don't report that they've had other knocks to their head, or maybe not even knocks. This is what I'm trying to say. That kid could be sitting there, and their parents rear-ended, and the movement of the whiplash, if they've had prior brain injuries, is causing more brain injury. And I'm going to throw one other thought into this, which is a sidebar to it, is that everybody's walking around with their cell phones up to their head, and that's emitting EMF waves. The old traditional phones that you used to pick up, you put to your ear, was fine. Then came the mobile phones. Those were fine. But then the flip phones are still fine. Those are all on radio waves. The new cell phone, the smartphones, are EMF. That's like putting your head into a microwave. So now, and I have a blog on that on my website of drdiane.com. That's drdiane.com. And this is where we go back and look at your history. This is what we look in the consult. How much of your symptoms have you had multiple brain injuries that you were not aware of, that from different sources? Did you have at birth, did you have not enough oxygen? Did you have an infection? Did you have anesthesia, which causes cognitive impairment? So all these things, and going back to the sports, those children should not be wearing helmets because they're running faster and their necks cannot support it. You know, you think of rugby. If I hit your head and you hit my head, we both can feel it. You going in with a helmet, you're not feeling. So going back to the question, we have to get helmets that, you know, can really protect the head, and so it's not going back and forth. Young children should not be doing that with any kind of equipment. And, you know, so I feel very strongly about that.
Well, I've seen the, you know, you watch football games now on Sunday or Saturday or whatever, if you're watching an NFL game. And this, if a player hits you with their helmet,
yeah,
and they believe it's intentional, it's a penalty. And I yeah. guess... you know, to my way of thinking is, if you hit somebody like you hit Gronk and he has to leave the game, the guy that hit him ought to leave the game too.
Oh, I agree. No, I mean, it's no different than if I walked into a store with a gun and shoot you. I'm intentionally doing that.
Yeah.
That person is, we're not talking, he's intentionally trying to knock Gronk unconscious. That is absolutely to do him harm. There is no question. He's not there just to get the ball. If he is taking his, and what he doesn't realize is that he's hitting his own head, and he's also causing himself to have a concussion.
Yeah, and the concern is that it's seen on TV, kids see it, and they mimic it because it's successful, and it just regenerates itself.
Then people have these symptoms of brain fog, headaches, sleep disorders. A lot of people, they don't realize that when they come in and they're coming and telling me they're feeling anxious or they're not sleeping well, and we're not talking about the obvious people who are coming in with concussions, I mean, that have been diagnosed. But when I start to go do their history, I have found out, oh, yeah, number one cause of concussions is falls. Okay, and then think about you being in your auto accidents. You watch right now this past winter how many auto accidents there were. And I'm going to give you one statistic. It's going to blow you away. At the Boston Marathon, that blast, within 1/4 mile of that blast, there was 20,000 people who have a brain injury from that blast, and do not know it.
Wow.
And because what they're going to go to the doctor for is from either the physical injuries that they got from the blast or from the PTSD from the trauma from the blast. But those symptoms, many of the symptoms, they're not sleeping and they're not having their headaches, which will be equated to either the shrapnel or from the trauma, is they didn't realize that the compression, it's no different than an IED, that when we have people from blast injuries, I work with people from Afghanistan and from have brain injury from blast injuries. And I wrote a whole report, put it in the Boston Globe, and this has not been followed through. There's, I'm telling you, over 20,000 who have been totally misdiagnosed, and the concussion has not been addressed.
Talked a little bit when we talked earlier. You talked about restorative sleep.
Yes.
And I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about that and the different kinds of sleep.
For the brain to heal, you know, if you're in chronic pain, you have ADD, you have a stroke, the only way your body, you have irritable bowel syndrome, any of these things, you have to understand it is coming from your brain. Your brain is controlling your autonomic nervous system, which is your gut, your heart, your breathing, and it's registering pain. The only way that those whole system is going to heal is through having restorative sleep, and that means that you go through REM, non-REM, REM, non-REM. And as I was telling the other day, that the best way to picture that is two different ways. One is to think of the Tobin Bridge. If you're going to fix the bridge, you have to stop traffic, and then you repair it, but then you have to let the traffic go. You can't be always just repairing. And so you fix the bridge, let some people go, fix the bridge, let it go. And I said most visually is with if somebody has a dog, they can see the dog. What happens when the brain is repairing itself? It paralyzes the peripheral nervous system. And if you've seen a dog, when they're going to sleep, you'll see that their legs go out and they're dead weight. And then a little while later, you see them, their legs are moving, they're barking, they're dreaming. And then they go back to being look like they're paralyzed and they can't move, dead weight, till they're very flaccid again and they're barking and all that. That is the REM, non-REM, REM, non-REM that you need to. You have to go through 8 times at night to get restorative for your brain to repair.
Wow. And on the average, how many people actually get that?
Right now, I would say about 40%.
40%. How much in your practice or in your travels, how much of the population is sleep deprived?
I would say 99.
What are the ways to combat that?
Well, before we go in that, to talk about there, when I say about the sleep problem, we're talking about you can have hyposomnia, meaning that people are sleeping all the time. That, you know, you'll find them at their desk sleeping. You'll find them everywhere. They're falling asleep at the cars. That's one. Insomnia is either trying to go to sleep, and they have trouble going to sleep, and then they fall asleep for the rest of the night. Or what is typical, is, especially with people at a certain age, is that you go to sleep, and you wake up several times, and then go back to sleep, and then you wake up, and you're up for a few hours. I have a friend who, she tells me, she probably gets up 4 times during the night. And if I told her, let's go take a nap right now, she just couldn't go take a nap.
No, you can't. I do that, and I wake up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and I will... I'll go get the Sudoku from the paper and do that, or you know, watch or read a book or something until I can get my eyes get heavy enough to need to go back to sleep.
So to answer your question, there's several methods. One is again neurofeedback, which is retraining your brain and re-regulating. It's a little bit similar to operant conditioning. You know, if you tell the dog to sit and they get a reward for sitting, they sit more because they're going to get the reward of the cookie. And the CES device, as I said, is an FDA-approved. And all this is on my website. I have all the different types of sleep problems and all the different methods is on my website of drdiane.com. That's drdiane.com. Or in my two books, I have a whole chapter on sleep. But to answer your question is that taking Ambient, absolutely not. The hallucinations are absolutely bad. A lot of the medications for sleep only cause people to have other very bad side effects. You know, people take Benadryl. Yeah, Benadryl is great for allergic reactions, but a lot of people take it for sleep. And so there are certain medications that if someone has really chronic, their MD will help them. But going back through heart rate variability breathing, a certain way of learning how to breathe so that your heart and your brain, the autonomic nervous system, is in sync. And that is, we do that, and that's heart math. I have the equipment on my website. And is that it's learning to get the brain and heart coordinated so that when you are stressed, that you can calm the fight-flight area, because that's what's happening, is you start thinking, and then you're getting anxious, and you're thinking, oh, should I do this for work? I didn't do that. Oh, I haven't planned. And your mind is racing. So doing that, hypnosis is very effective. So there's various methods that really absolutely have been effective for sleep.
Well, I share a cute anecdote with you about sleeping, and then we have to go to our next guest. But years ago, when I worked in the public sector, I was in the chain of people who, once the superintendent of schools called school off, I would get a call, and I would call the transportation and the operations people and tell them there's no school that day. Well, the usually call between 5:30 and 6 is when the call had to be made.
Oh, yeah.
This particular day, the superintendent decided at 2 o'clock in the morning that they weren't going to have school that day, so he called me at 2:30. I got up. I made all my phone calls. I went back to bed. I went back to sleep. I woke up a half an hour later, and I said, did he really call? Or did I dream it? But I had already made my calls.
Right.
So there wasn't going to be any school anyway.
Right.
The question is, when I drove to work, was I going to get in trouble, or was it on the level? But anyway, but thank you. I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and wish you the very best. I hope you
continue. I'd just like to give your audience my phone number.
Sure.
Of 800-500-9971. That's 800-500-9971. And I want to emphasize that part of what I do, not only do I treat, but I help people, as I said, locally, nationally, and internationally, so that if find out what is the best treatment for them, and I help them find the appropriate provider wherever they are, anywhere worldwide. Okay?
Great. Thank you. Thank you again. Have a good
And my website again is drdiane.com. That's drdiane.com. Thank you for having me on your show.
Great. Take care, Doc. Bye.
Bye-bye.